Blog Talk Radio.
In a post solstice period of existence right now, there's only 190 days left in this year. But today we're going to talk about a piece of history that's relevant for Masons, the formation of the first Grand Lodge on the 24th of June, St. John's Day in London. 1717, and I want to talk to you about putting this in some context, because it happened at a time before the development of the middle class, and it's almost difficult to imagine that an order that was established in the formal sense or around 1717 before Constitution. Actually was derivative. It was the outcome of Masonic function, whatever that might be. And I'd like you to think about that, if you could, please. Before we go too far down this road, I want to give a shout out to our brethren in France, bonjour, to our listeners in India, and again to our listeners from South Korea, and Norway, and France, and Australia. You're getting into winter, I hope, with looking at the fall, and I hope the summer season has gone well for you. The listeners of Masonic Effects, you're more than welcome to email me. I've upgraded my email address. So wherever you are on the planet, if you can get to an internet, connect to me at grahamfx@gmail.com. And that'll get your message through, and I'll be sure to answer them as they come in. I think it speaks well to all of us, about us, to think that this is an interesting phenomena, an interesting connection or interconnection of listeners, of people with similar interests and similar purpose, I would hope. to think that our order was established prior to the middle class, I think is significant. And these are conversations. I dare say you don't have them in your lodge. What in the world would it mean? And then for us to try and take an apolitical stance in the view, I think is cautious optimism. I think that's quite brilliant of us to do that in so many ways, because it's not that an order, any kind of organization should just occur with indifference, without purpose or connection or a narrative with the larger communities around. And certainly Masonry hasn't been lost in that landscape. Well, the interesting part, though, brethren, is that a lot of what we know today a lot of what we know about the order, this so-called secret society, is the result of material that was written down by people that, now I want to think of simply a shortcoming of character, that they took obligations, that they became miffed for whatever reason. Perhaps they were with just in an atmosphere that was just wrong for them, an atmosphere that was uncomfortable for them. That's you know, understandable. But I also can't tell if it was purposeful. Today, what we have is largely, a lot of what we know is based on those errant pieces of information, the exposés, the shocking revelations, the violation of that elemental notion of privacy. I think it's been overstated so often, I don't need to get into that, to that whole notion today, but I think the word that I think privacy was a Masonic version of discretion. And I think it was it required a bit more confidence in our maturity and our sense of indulgence about who we would reveal ourselves to. Not to say we're not talking about, you know, those situations that are repeated around the campfire, where once upon a time or in certain locations it was dangerous to be to come out as a Freemason. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the day-by-day, more pedestrian existence of Masons. Now, remember, I think Masonry, the birth of Masonry, was the harbinger of the death of indolence. But think about it, putting that not in our contemporary situation. Our contemporary situation is, and rightfully or wrongfully, you certainly disagree with me, is that the economic stability of a lot of the major industrial sites of the world was due to an ability to overcome the painful disconnection from colonialism, that suppression, and to find a new grounding. We needed a means of redistribution of wealth and power. And the middle class began to grow. It didn't necessarily push out the landed gentry or the estates in any way, but it instilled a sense. This is very, very Weberian, isn't it? In terms of, we start to think today in socioeconomic terms, and we know this is a broad group of people in a contemporary society who fall socioeconomically between the working class and the upper class. Well, if we look at it, this is not necessarily the major portion of the population. And now we have some pretty horrific variations on this thing. The working poor, people that are working forthright, honest, and forbearing, and aren't able to make ends meet. Then beyond them, we have the dire poverty. And we're still in many places of the world, we're still able to stand up on our hind legs and blame those people for their situation. That notion of social stratification is quite profound. And it's been hard for thoughtful men to begin to understand it. We're hundreds and hundreds of years behind in our collective progress. That sense of fraternity and equality that we espouse, we seem to have shared this notion of collective and selective amnesia. It's not to say, though, that this is licensed for an insurrection. Far from it. Oh, far from it. It's exactly to understand what's going on and to be able to see our way forward and maintain the benefits of the stability that we have around us. In other words, how do we overcome this sense of imbalance and unfairness? We are watching and we know that there's an end game coming with this obscene massing of wealth, this obscene notion that there are some people born to lead and others to follow. That's like, really, you want to step back into the 17th century or the 14th century, go right ahead, but the world isn't stepping there with you. The world around us has a new voice. It's hunger and it's poverty and it's fear. Now, what's going to stabilize, you ask? You're the stabilizing element. You're the stabilizing chemistry. As daunting as that may seem, the way you go about your life, purposeful. You're looking for an ethical balance. You're beginning to realize the psychology of your existence, that doing for other people, sacrificing whatever that means to you, brings about an element of self-satisfaction. It's a flavor that very few people will ever taste, because in order to do it, you have to be selfless. If you're looking to do something for gain or fame or celebrity, you will never taste this. You will never taste this experience. Not because I say so, but because you need to do those things. You need to have that element of self-sacrifice and that honesty of spirit, that authenticity that is you, in order to achieve the highest level of charity possible. The highest level being that act where the person that receives the benefit, person or persons, does not know that it is there was any deliberation behind it, and does not associate that gain or benefit or progress in any way with you or me. Now think about that. Do you have the appetite? You may find that, as others have, that flavor can become quite intoxicating. Are you curious, or are you sufficiently happy? Don't tell me that you're happy and content with the smugness of life around, or that you can tolerate suffering, or that once you begin to those things begin to register on you, that you have answers and solutions. That's the middle class in you. The middle class in you. You have values. See, there's a commonality around the world of the development of this idea of middle class. And it's not North American or American, certainly not, no. Don't nationalism or that ethnocentrism doesn't really have a bearing, I think, on the principles of middle class. I think that comes, this is something that was developing in different parts of the world almost as a result of a reaction to the evolution of profit, evolution of the attainment of wealth, of industrialism. It's in the middle of the social hierarchy. Huh? Now, we first see this kind of talk around 1745. You know, when we're you can go and trace this back to do a little bit of work on the work of James Bradshaw. He did a pamphlet called The Scheme to Prevent Running Irish Wolves to France. We'll do a little bit of work on that, and you'll see some of the first mentions. And then the whole idea of middle class helped to drive the French Revolution. What the French Revolution did was give caution to all of the monarchs around the world, all of the monarchs. There is a tipping point, not a breaking point. There's a tipping point of tolerance. Now, the Occupy movement today, fast forward it all, the Occupy movement that's going on around the world today is the current echo of that voice that started hundreds of years ago. Masonry now began before that was well entrenched. And so you were bound to see in the language, bound to see wording that suggests adherence to subservience. A bowing, if you will, to authority. Now, this might have played out better. Where it would play out worse would be probably, pardon me, brethren, in Scotland, play off terribly, because the monarchs were never monarchs of the land, eh? They were never. You swore fealty. Scotland was always independent of the monarch. Other countries in Britain, not so. There was no divine attribution to the monarchs in some locations. Wherever you are on the face of the earth, you have a unique history. And the way you think, and the pride that you feel, and your sense of connection with your community, with your group. No, it's gone beyond tribal. Gone beyond tribal. We're beginning to see tribal connections. We're seeing cousins of different color. We're seeing our family, our families have been adaptive. Different climates, different cultures, we've adapted. Our languages have changed. Our way of faith has changed. Our clothing has changed. Our taste in foods has become more, I think, exotic. But then people like you are able to see through that. And you're seeing connections. And where that happens, of course, it's in the mind. Now, let's bring a little bit of focus. I've got a really interesting commentary today. Are we particles or are we waves? I know, homage to Einstein, yeah? Okay. But are we? And my subtitle for this is The Greening of Masonry. This is a group that has been in its infancy. Hundreds of years it's been in its infancy, and it's beginning to find its footing. It's just beginning to find its footing, and I think that's remarkable. Absolutely remarkable. And you and I can be on the doorstep of all of that change. What's it going to mean? Well, that's going to scratch your head and think about it, and one of us will be closer to the being prescient, being able to identify what's going to play out. And in making those statements, are we going to be showing our own resolution, or are we going to be more aspirational? Or are we going to be that one last gasp? We're audacious as we ever were, boys. Here's a little something from Spain I think you'll like. It's a familiar kind of a tune, the Magala de Zira. This has Joan Chimero featuring. Good jazz, good jazz. Check it out. Well, what you're hearing here is a technical problem. I was messing with a Bluetooth on my, that's it. Check this out.
There's a note that you're hungry, yearning, burning inside of me.
That was a remarkably well done rendition, don't you? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. No, it's fantastic. Fantastic piece of work on a Night and Day, a tune that's familiar to all of us. Let me talk to you a little bit about the commentary today. It's understanding some things that are kind of self-evident, if you think about it. I mean, it's not so much the commonness, I think, you know, what holds us together in common. I think it's more a matter of recognizing the uniqueness in everybody. And it's that kind of, it's like saying, you know, there are different molecular structures. So are all molecules the same? You know, it's a little bit hard to get away with that kind of thinking. Not if you're, you know, paying attention to sort of maybe the bigger picture and the context. Masonry puts a lot of life into context. I want to share with you just a little something that might help us to come to grips with just how unfair you may be to yourself, how unrealistic we can be at times. If this part of the show is going to be a bit frank, so if you're not inclined to that and you're set, you've got all the answers. In other words, if you've reached a certain age where you have decided that you have all the ideas that your brain can handle and that there's no room for any new information, then turn the program off and go and dress, put on your regalia and stand in front of the mirror and enjoy the view. Think of all masonry as a body of work. Now join me as I visit every Grand Master to exchange his teachings for an idea. Yes, his teachings. Now, what's the exchange? Why do we not measure the success of our lodges in terms of the quality and function of teamwork? And then why do we not help lodges transform each particle into coordinated harmonic streams? Recently, I spoke with a lodge officer, new and eager. You know the type, pure joy. Spoke to him about drop-offs. For a time, the lodge was on autopilot, month by month of initiations. Now, this is a part of a process that isn't as deliberate and refined as we might find in some of the other grand lodges, where there's years of examination and we want to reinforce and we want to encourage the commitment to our order. It's not to water it down or devalue it in this kind of a jurisdiction where that doesn't happen. But it's a different type of screening process. We give out very few secrets. We give out a taste of the experience here. And then we find people are getting a stronger sense of whether this is something that is compatible with their nature or not. And I think what we see, what we're talking about here, is compatibility. If you give me an opportunity to build my understanding of the order step by step, you're allowing me to practice my skills in something that I begin to understand. You help me to understand that there is a process of refinement and it does take effort, and that there is no teacher or principle or authority that is going to now make you learn. You're not a boy. That these next stages are strictly up to you. And that age isn't an impediment. if you're a dull boy, it's going to be more of a struggle to understand the abstraction. Would that be a barrier? It probably could be. But we don't know if the experience may arouse or spark something in the recesses of the mind. We don't know that. And we're willing here to take that risk. But here, there's chafing that goes on. Curious. So you're still with me, and we're going to visit every Grand Master. Every Grand Master is leading, yeah? He's the symbol, or she is the symbol of the embodiment of knowledge, insight. Why do we not measure success in terms of team function? For a time, the group he was part of was on autopilot, going through the motions, not noticing, not paying attention, just accepting without thinking about what it was they were doing. This, for many people familiar, the older people year by year, find that that whole process, unknowing or unthinking or unchallenged or not given a lot of analysis, is the essence of success, the work itself. If you don't have work, it's a working class ethic, isn't it? If you don't have work, you don't have profit, you don't have money, it's really difficult to live. Success is having a job, having work. And if you're destitute, then it doesn't matter what type of work. Any work is better than no work. And fair remuneration is important, so that the owners don't skim off all of the profits and keep people in penury, keep people working in poverty. And we've seen, historically, we've seen examples of that. Why is the buying power of the middle class in North America no better now than it was 35 years ago? Why are we seeing shifts in the Middle East, in people's expectations? Why are we seeing notions of equality being injected into Eastern cultures? Here, the officer explained to me how difficult it was for younger members to juggle family, occupational, and Masonic schedules. A bit pedestrian, you think? You'll become an officer. You'll join us for regional activities. You'll join us for a pint. This seems to push away new members. Yeah, in this environment. In and of itself, those things aren't a complication, but compress them. Compress them. It becomes a hasty pudding. So can anything be done to alter the status quo? Well, of course. We change expectations. We change the narrative to make it welcoming, and we add a measure of teamwork, of connection, that balances the needs of him with the needs of the process of masonry, the needs of the lodge. Is that teamwork or is that connection? Tell me, is masonry a process? You're all Masons out there. Is masonry a process of doing for somebody else, doing for the new boy? Is it? Or is it a process of rehabilitating that man to help develop talents, his talents, to help him giving fish to to a hungry man or teaching a man to fish? Where are you in that? We change expectations, we change the narrative to make it welcoming, and we add a measure of teamwork that balances the needs of the new boys. We regularly pour such enormous talent into the field, but we don't tell them what it is. We don't tell them what the game is, what the terms of engagement are. We do for him. And the bleak kind of attitude is, trust us. We know what we're doing. We've been doing this for a long time. See, putting trust in a process that hasn't been thought through is a bit foolish. All of these processes warrant examination, just as you, your life warrants examination. And I have to agree with the Greek, a life unexamined is not worth living. So can anything be done to alter the status quo? We seem comfortable watching the ensuing confusion and frustration as they're left heading for an exit, leaving the loyals to shrink. How sad. How unnecessary. The issue isn't attracting talent or their commitment. It's understanding how the game is played, how engagement occurs, and how to get it right. The mentoring is a narrative that speaks about things that inspire us and a view that teaches the part each performs, big or small, to achieve our goal. Teams have individual talents complemented by common knowledge that if each of us performs our role, the goal is within reach. We carry one another. We encourage. But that's entirely different than doing for. Doing for. Here. Listen to this. No more be grieved at that which thou hast done. Roses have thorns, and silver fountains mud. Clouds and eclipses stain both moon and sun. And loathsome canker lives in sweetest bud. All men make faults, and even I in this, authorizing thy trespass with compare, myself corrupting, salving thy amiss, excusing thy sins more than thy sins are. For to thy sensual fault I bring incense. Thy adverse party is thy advocate. And gainst myself a lawful plea commands, such civil war is in my love and hate, that I, an accessory, needs must to that sweet thief which sourly robs from me. You're grieved. We're grieved at what we've done. But it's out of proportion. It's out of proportion. We're grieving because we have notions, because we have conscience. But as Shakespeare points out in his 35th sonnet, roses have thorns. I have a yellow rose growing outside the window right now. It has thorns. Perfect is perfect, eh? There's context for all that we do and all that we are. Here's a little context. Sit back. Top up your glass. This is Django Reinhardt from Belgium, 1910. That's his version of Dinah. Not bad for a guy. How many fingers was he missing? Help me understand. We have connections with history, the music. I hope brings you back to an earlier time, 1929. Louis Armstrong. This is early recording. This is a guy, Django Reinhardt, was born in 1910 in Belgium, right? He's young when he passed away. Anyway, dilettante, worked his way up, self-made in a lot of ways, took advantage of opportunities around him, and he was a great talent that we can still enjoy today. Here, I have questions. Are we the particles or are we the waves? Do those particles, each one of us, and our Masonic functions, our ethics and our values and principles, are they simply a matter of our ability to be historians? Is that what Masonry has become? Then what was Masonry when we didn't have hundreds of years of history? If that's what it is today, understanding, well, I would go back to the 15th century, understanding hundreds of years, and you go back much further than that to the essence of the ideas. Unexamined, I think, freedom of thought doesn't matter. Freedom of speech doesn't matter if it's not examined. So what was Masonry before this? What was Masonry before the class structure? It seems that it was ideas about existence, about the nature of humanity, the nature of mankind, the notion of freedoms that compelled men to move forward. And I only say men because I'm so a product of my environment, a product of my background, where history erased women. The history of women and women's contribution to philosophy, to religion, to invention was erased. So for anybody, for me to think that it was a male-dominated world, male-dominated in the sense that men had better ideas and were better equipped constitutionally to lead, that women were irascible and had an inability to control their emotion, well, that's just insulting. That's just bloody insulting. Yeah, things were different. But the history that was written down is largely inaccurate. So answer for me, help me, ladies and gentlemen, what was Masonry if it was not the study of history? Oh, then maybe it was an understanding of purpose, of our place in the order, of our relationship with the Creator. Dealing with these demagogues, the notions that some monarch would be able to determine what faith we held. Now the survivors amongst us would be able to adapt with subterfuge, adapt and keep their thoughts to themselves. With this king, I'm going to be a Protestant. And with this one, I'm going to be a Catholic. Because if I don't, I'll be persecuted. In this environment, I'm going to be a Jew. in this environment, I'm going to be a Christian. In this environment, I'm going to be Shiite. In this one, I'm Sunni. That common man survive. And yet, there's this notion that it doesn't have to be this way. That something about the suppression of free thought is against human nature. Against human nature. Now, this kind of thinking contradicts the canons. Even small children begin to emphasize the benefits of adhering to the rules in their games. There has to be some sense of consistency. And even little children figure that out. So we need some type of order around us to help us define infringements on our freedoms of thought. And here Masonry comes along far more challenging, making political statements without being politicians. Statements of social reform without being reformists, without being associated, without being a part of the hoi polloi, contributing to the well-being of entire communities. How can that be? You do that by using discretion, knowing when to talk and when to be quiet. You know the formula, work plus play plus silence, W plus P plus S equals happiness. Go and Google that formula and find out which mathematician came up with it. Silence. Do you need it? I think when we don't understand things, we often will blurt out unkind or half-developed ideas. One thing you notice as you get a little older, and I'm getting a little older, is that often when I'm blurting something out or getting on my high horse or, you know, standing up on my back legs, that I'm about to say something remarkably silly because I don't understand. And of course, what I don't understand is unimportant because everything coming out of me, I have that finite number of ideas stuffed away in my head, and there's just no room for ideas. But along comes the likes of you, and you sit down with me and you say, you know, there's other ways of thinking, there's other ways of approaching things. Well, all of a sudden, I'm left with this dialectic. I'm left with this notion that I have an idea that I like, and I can appreciate an idea that you have. Well, all I want to do is be right all the time. And you're telling me that there can be more than one right. Unless I disavow you, unless I can use selective amnesia and forget you. Well, I think we've been trained, many of us have been trained to do that with an entire gender. And we can ask today, how does 51% of the population of the earth allow this to happen, that they are subjugated? Well, the narrative has changed. The sense of authenticity and power has changed. Are we looking at the cruel and harsh ruthlessness of the amassing of obscene levels of wealth predicated on the suffering of hundreds of millions of people? We can't even scare each other anymore with notions of socialism or that harmony. Masonry, after all, is a for Dissect It seems to have a lot of those kind of I've got your back types of statements. Part of what I'm to do to frighten you? Is that what we need to do with each other? Or to be gentle so that we can try and absorb and come to terms with some of these ideas? If you tell me that my way of life, if somebody walks up to me, a stranger, tells me my way of life is backward, depending on my mood, I might say, yeah, you bang on. What's your point? Oh, always probing. I want to know what's going on behind that idea. Like that started somewhere. Or are you looking for a dust up? Like, who are you to tell me? Well, who you are is every man. And who I am is every man. And can I adapt? You're damn right I can. I can adapt because I must. And you encourage me to do that. You encourage me because you very gently and calmly talk to me about how dangerous it is, how much risk I face if I don't think through and respect what I'm doing, how selfish I would become, and how that would lead to me losing a significant opportunity for an enriched experience. And you bring that to me. More jazz. This is a song by an American country singer who was not popular for a longest time. He did ballads and he did some country music. You and I know him as Willie Nelson. Listen to this. This is Chantel Chamberlain.
Thank you.
That is just incredible. Dun, 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 dun. Well, we're moving through the program in fine style today. You make the journey collectively much easier in a way. It's more familiar. You being in the company of thoughtful men and women is always an absolute pleasure. It helps me to understand the work, or as one wag, loose tongue, once explained, referred to this whole process of the philosophy of masonry as the bullshit. Isn't that sad? Isn't that sad? He's still on the outside looking in. So where does the function and process of masonry happen? And can you develop Masonic judgment? Can you develop the kind of judgment and thinking and clarity that you associate with masonry? I think you can, but not by studying the history of masonry. I think that's an odd phenomena. The history of masonry tells us about some things, but it doesn't really. It's like saying, I'm going to read the... It's like, in order to progress, you need to study biography. You need to study history. You do. Those things are important. But only to read within the framework of what other of opinion is limiting you. You want to develop yourself, read poetry, read Shakespeare, read good literature, listen to good music, develop tastes, challenge yourself so you don't seem fearful, narrow-minded. Masonry is, after all, the development of insight about yourself and the world that we live in. We do that through a profound sense of access to the arts and sciences. You may go to an art gallery and sit there and sit down in front of a painting and be amazed, or just be stunned, or just be overwhelmed. Like, what is it that this person is? What's the process? How do paintings actually speak to somebody? Well, is it just the story that's... there's a stream, there's a little house, there's people, so therefore it's a picnic, right? Or is it this magnificent horse? There's somebody's pet or somebody's property. Or is it an expression of a symbol of something deeper? Is it a symbol that equates to the human expression? Do you have a picture for the bittersweetness of life? You know, when the unforeseen and unwanted happen, but that we can also appreciate what we had. Poets, sculptors, painters, they've helped to give us a mindset, something beyond words that helps us understand, that helps us connect with ourselves. And thank goodness that they have. Anyway, it's been pretty decent talking to you today. being with you today. Meets me happening inside the lodge or outside the lodge. Send your notes to me. If you like the show, fine. If you don't, fine. GrahamFX@gmail.com. Thank you, India. Thank you, France. Thank you, Norway. Thank you, South Korea. Thank you, Canada. Thank you, Britain. Thank you, America. See you soon. This is Sahib. Sahib, this is Bohemia After Dark. Those guys in Denmark have some interesting stuff going on. Thank you. Talk to you soon.